Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right? Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Having learned life lessons the hard way, Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. So tune in, turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Now, here's your host, Chuck Gallagher.
Well, this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and welcome to the show today. And boy, this is going to be a fun show. I sit back and I think about, over the life experience that I have, what could have been. And I don't know that many of you that have listened to the show on a regular basis know this about me, but I started off as a music major in college. In fact, when I was 16 years old, now that's almost, I'm 57, so you know we're talking about 40 some years ago, I made a record album. And I was not, I wasn't the guy that had lots of money. So I went business to business and said, you know, if you'd like to promote your business, inside of this record album is going to be an announcement of all of the people who helped make this possible. So I raised the money, went to Arthur Smith Studios in Charlotte, North Carolina, recorded this album, had a blast. I mean, it was so much fun. And the local paper did an article and they said, well, we don't know if the guy's got a career in music, but he doggone sure does in sales.
Marketing's half the battle.
Marketing's half the battle. My guest today is Larry Williams. Larry is a radio broadcaster, journalist, business expert. And look, you're going to find some things about Larry that are just incredible to know. I mean, you know, Larry, I have to say, I kind of wondered if I had stuck with music. And by the way, I went to college as a music major, got out in 6 months. I was a voice major. And so, you know, I went to the professors and they said, what's your major? And I said, performance. They said, it needs to be teaching or church music. I said, no, I want it to be performance. I said, no, it should be teaching or church music. We went battle for this. And I finally said, okay, you know what? I must suck. I just probably have no talent. So I'm not going to be poor. I'm going to go to accounting. So I went to accounting because I knew I could make money.
Me too.
No. I have
a degree in accounting and spent the early part of my younger years in the late 70s and early 80s being a guitar player in a heavy metal band, a hair band, mind you. And, of course, I'm kind of lacking in that. I was lacking in the talent, too. But after it all didn't work out, I ended up becoming an accountant for Rockwell International, the guys that built the space shuttle.
No way. Well, you know, how totally freaking weird. Okay. So if you're listening to the show, one, I didn't have a clue.
Totally awesome. That is so funny.
Yeah. Well, you know, you sit back in music, and I have to say it this way, because I know now you speak and you help people, business people all over the country. So I know what you do as a professional speaker. But Larry, I've got to say, I kind of thought it's really ironic that, you know, here I was a voice major and I wanted to perform and was talked out of it in college. The dream was squelched, went into accounting, made money, and then decided, you know, but there's still some performance there. So I'm going to be a professional speaker. And I think both of us would acknowledge we might get paid more to do one speaking engagement than a lot of bands get paid who are playing every Friday and Saturday night.
I could so relate to the starving musician thing. We made no money whatsoever. I mean, it wasn't even enough to buy a Happy Meal. But we loved what we did. And, right. And that was half the thing, too. It was a matter of, you know, we did it for the girls. And we did it for the adulation, I guess you could say. The artistry or craft part was really fun. But we didn't make no money in it. And I was a guitar player. Now, did you sing? Is that what you did, Chuck?
I was the singer, yep.
You was the singer. Okay. I didn't sing at all because I have a voice like Bob Dylan. It's really, really bad. But I like to write songs and I like to play guitar. But after giving up that dream, watching every – I was in L.A. down the Hollywood scene and watching all my friends, the guys in Quiet Riot and Rat and you know, all these wonderful groups get signed to major record deals and I got nothing. So I'm watching all my friends get signed and go off and become rock stars. I'm just sitting there going, I guess it's not meant to be. And I stumbled into accounting. And that was my vocation. And I'm one of these weird guys that actually really liked accounting. Go figure that. But I enjoyed it. But then I moved to Nevada. And when I moved to Nevada, I thought, you know what? I just need to, you know, keep going, making a living in accounting. And I did that. what happened was I stumbled into a radio station one day, and I wanted to pull records for the DJs. I literally thought that's how it worked. Okay,
no, there was, kidding.
Oh, there was no dream to be a radio DJ. I mean, that was like the farthest thing in the world from my mind. But I used to work in a record store called Licorice Pizza Records and Tapes. You know, picture it, a black vinyl, you know, album. Looks like a licorice pizza, right? It was
right.
Called Licorice Pizza, a small store chain out of Southern California, 26 stores. And I knew a lot about music. I loved being in music, but I was away from the whole rock band scene now. And I just wanted to earn extra ski money on the weekends because I was living up here in Lake Tahoe. So I stumbled into this radio station and I wanted to pull records for the DJs. The general manager took me upstairs to the production room, sits me down, interviews me, and he's talking to me. He says, I want you to read this copy, which I found out later was called copy. It looked like a script to me. And he puts a microphone in front of me, just like you have there, hits play and record on the reel-to-reel machine, and he says, I want you to read this copy into this microphone, and I'll be right back. And he walks out of the room. I'm thinking, well, this is kind of strange that, you know, way to do an interview. I guess he wants to see if I'm literal. If I can't read the sides of the albums, I can't very well pull records for the DJs, right? So I'm reading this copy and it says, you know, come into the Carson Valley Inn for our three great restaurants. We have great chicken dinner specials. I'm getting really bored with this exercise. So I started fluffing it up. I said, and if you come in right now, you'll get the $6.99 chicken dinner special. That's right, for a limited time, only $6.99 chicken dinner at Michael's here at the Carson Valley Inn. I threw that out there, and I hit stop on the machine. He came back in. We're talking more in interview style. And then he starts rewinding the reel-to-reel machine. He starts playing it back, and I'm sinking lower and lower in my chair going, oh, my gosh. And I said, sir, I'm really sorry. I'm not taking this very seriously. Yeah, I can read great. Can I just pull records for the DJs now? He goes, how did you know how to do that? I said, screw off. I do that all the time. I'm really sorry. I'm not taking this seriously. He goes, no, that's called inflection. How'd you know how to do that? I go, I was just mimicking what the radio DJs do. Can I pull records now? He goes, I want to make you an intern. I want to give you your own show. You'd be a great radio DJ with a little bit of refinement.
Oh, how fun.
I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. And the next thing I knew, it started off a radio career that is just, you know, blossomed and to this day just is incredible. All the experiences I've had, I've interviewed the vice president of the United States, A-list celebrities, and professional speaking, own a entertainment company. It just all started from just an accident.
Now, isn't that fascinating? You say it started from an accident. I probably subscribe to the theory there are no mistakes and there are no accidents. It's you going into the right place at the right time. You sit back, and it's so funny. Because you said to me now, you know, I want to make sure we're real clear on this Straight Talk Radio. You said, oh, I can't sing. I sound like Bob Dylan. Well, hey, Bob Dylan has made a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, it's
true. Sucking as a singer. And yes, I said that. I went to a concert of his not long ago. Well, first, I'm just going to say this. I regret. I never saw Elvis Presley and I had the chance.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, man, you know, so therefore, anybody I've ever wanted to see, I've gone to see because I don't want to have that regret again. And I went to see Bob Dylan, I don't know, 7 years ago and left the concert thinking, I don't have a freaking clue what that man sang in most of the songs.
It's gotten worse over the years, his voice.
Oh, my goodness.
He's just such a legend. Oh, my gosh. The talent that, you know, his writing. What he's done for pop culture is just amazing. But
it really is. But he can't sing. But you've got the radio voice because you know how to put an inflection in.
But
and
see,
all you've got to do is listen to it and, you know. Oh, my goodness.
I never knew that, though. If somebody would have told me you had a great voice, I've had a 15-year head start on my career. This didn't happen until I was 30. You know, this is 1990 is when this happened. And I had no idea that, you know, I couldn't sing. I couldn't really play guitar that well or write songs that well. I didn't make it in the hair band that I tried at so hard, you know, for so many years. But I walked into a radio station. I said, you have a really good voice. I said, why didn't somebody tell me I had a good voice all this time? Nobody ever told me.
You know, it's fascinating. We've got about 3 minutes before our first break. But, you know, it's kind of fascinating, Larry, that we fall in sometimes to what is natural for us and where our passion is in some of the oddest and most unusual ways. And I have a sense that, you know, you've got Mind Your Own Business is a book that you, I think that was your first book. And
yes.
And then another book, Customer Service A to Z. And I'm going to take a guess that before we really get into the next segment and talk about developing your B-sides, that in those first two books, there's probably a lot of sage wisdom. But most people who have a lot of success tend to find that ultimately they do what's natural for them, what they have passion in doing and what they enjoy doing. Have you found that to be the case?
I have, and it's one of the points I make, and we'll talk more about in the next segment and develop your B-sides, is we've spent years of our life being who we are. We don't need to go find the holy grail of being somebody different. I think a lot of the hidden talents and skills that I talk about in B-sides are hidden within, and it's just a matter of, you know, digging down deep and finding them. So I absolutely agree with that, 1,000%.
So, you know, as we get close to the break, I have to say you've had an amazing story. Now, number one, we've got about a minute left. Tell me, though, when you were in the rock band, I've just got to end with this portion in this segment. When you were in the rock band, what was that freaking like?
It was cool. I mean, back then I had hair. It was fun because I think that gave me the first real taste of somebody appreciating, because they'll applaud, they'll stand up, they'll get into it. And to get that, you know, and I didn't get that when I was in radio. In the radio booth, you don't get to hear people laughing at your jokes or you know, coming along for the ride with you. But in a live situation like that, whether we're standing on a soapbox in the middle of the mall and talking, or we're standing in front of our class of students and saying a few words, when you get that connection with an audience, that's the best part. So the adulation is what I guess that fuels the fire to and the drive to want to be a better musician or be a better anything that you do in life. When you have somebody else on the other end of it getting some pleasure and benefit, and you can see that pleasure.
You know, that's absolutely cool. My guest is Larry Williams. Larry is a radio broadcaster, as you can probably tell from the voice, a journalist, a business expert, and his most recent book is Develop Your B-Sides. And when we get back from the break, we're going to develop or get into that and talk a little bit about more of your amazing story. Stick with us. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. And we're back here on Straight Talk Radio with my guest, Larry Williams. He is a radio broadcaster, journalist, business expert. And look, Larry's got an incredible story. If you were listening in the first segment, so here's a guy, may not have a lot of hair now, but he was in a long-haired rock and roll band. And I'm sitting back thinking, that had to be cool in Los Angeles to just be out there, you know, playing the guitar and getting your chicks for free, so to speak. and such good songs, you know. Now, look, Larry, I'm going to say this. I don't know your age, but, you know, I'm going to assume you got a few years behind you.
I'm 55.
Okay, well, I'm 57. And so, look, I'm going to say something that probably will offend a good portion of the audience, but I have got to wonder, today when I'm in restaurants, I hear music from the 70s. I hear the Beatles playing. I hear music, all of the music that I heard in the 70s, early 80s, I hear playing in all of these restaurants. And I've got to wonder, when I'm old and in a nursing home walking with my walker, am I going to be hearing rap songs?
Oh, gosh, I hope not. I've never gotten into the rap thing. I still don't understand it. Rhyming, poetry, speaking stuff. You know, Blondie did it years ago. I mean, rap was around in the 80s. It really started to come into play with Rapper's Delight. And like I said, Blondie doing Rapture. Remember that?
Right.
But that's where a lot of it came from. But yeah, it's you know, built up through the years. I still don't get it. I still don't like it. I especially don't like when they use the freedom of speech thing to really put in a bad spin, bad lyrical content, stuff that's not radio editable or playable. It bothers me. But hey, you know, I understand it's popular. I understand people like it. My daughter listens to it like crazy. I may not ever get it. I might be with you in that walker, and we're just going to have to keep cranking up Kool and the Gang, Earth, Wind, and Fire, and Bob Seger or something.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, you know, when I go out of this world, I want them to play Stairway to Heaven.
That's right.
I mean, I have to tell you, seeing that, you know, when I was a kid and Led Zeppelin came on the scene, I thought, man, those guys are really out there. I don't know if I can get into this music. And then I look back and I think, damn, I lived during the legendary time of Led Zeppelin, and they were rock.
Oh, yeah. My dad used to think Ted Nugent and Ozzy Osbourne were the Antichrist. I was like, yeah, they're not. They're not that bad. And by today's standards, it's like, well, they're actually kind of tame.
Yeah, they're actually kind of tame. So the only thing I can think of is if we're hearing rap at that point, if it's hip hop, the one thing is we'll have some boogie beat moving our.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll be having a little rock with the Walker.
Yeah, we will.
Okay, so look, I know you wrote a book called Develop Your B-Sides.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about that book and what you discovered from the early days in radio.
You know, I guess it was the benefit of working at an older radio station that an older guy ran, and the music equipment was really old, and so were the records. A lot of things was really old and obsolete about being in this radio station. So it wasn't like the state-of-the-art Ryan Seacrest studios or nothing. Well, I was in a really old small-town radio station with old records and old mixers and old everything. And I started going through the records themselves. And again, these were really ancient LPs and 45s. And I started to get into the dichotomy of the A side and the B side of the 45 RPM single. Now, back then, I didn't have the internet. So I only had my own research I could do, look at stuff in the encyclopedias for those younger people. Those are actual books.
Right.
But I used to talk to my friends who were radio DJs with other stations and those who I knew to kind of, you know, there's a lot of jocks that were like older jocks that had been around for 20, 30 years. So I'd ask them for advice too. So I had to kind of do all my own investigatory work on this. What I found out, I was thumbing through records and seeing things like I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor and noticing it's on the B side. Why is that on the B side? I flip it over. There's a song on the A side called Substitute. I'm all, wait a minute, that's kind of odd because we're substituting the B side is the hit. What's up with that? So I would ask my friends and just kind of learn more about it. The more I learned is I understood there was a real pecking order for the music industry folks to put A sides and B sides together that goes all the way back to the beginnings of the 45 RPM single in the mid 50s. And what I found out, Chuck, was the A side, as we know, was to be the hit record, the one that radio DJs would play and listeners would run down to the record store and buy that and bring it home like we all did. And we put the needle on there and we'd play that 5, 10, 15, 20 times. So it drove our parents absolutely crazy. But the record industry folks knew that eventually they would flip it over and listen to the B-side. So the B-side was not meant to be another hit. It was just meant to be a filler, just something decent. It didn't have to be great. It just had to be something to lure people in to like it. So what I found out is these B-side records, as they're being played, didn't have to be great. Just had to be good and decent because the idea was to lure fans in. If you like the B-side, you'll say to yourself, hey, I like two songs now. There's 10 songs on the full-length LP. So I'm 1/5 of the way there. If you like two songs, you might be more apt to go buy the album. You might buy other albums from that artist. You might buy concert tickets. You might buy merchandising. You might watch your favorite artist on American Bandstand or The Ed Sullivan Show or Soul Train. And of course, advertisers advertise on those shows. And product advertisement is very important. Keeps the show going. So the idea is to lure you in to buy more product. It was very deliberate on the record industry executives' part to lure people in. Think of a lake with that whole bunch of fish out there. Okay. And you're a great fisherman. You've got the best pole and reel money can buy. But if you don't have a hook or a lure on the other end of that line, you're not going to catch one fish, no matter how great you are. So the whole idea is to lure people in. So it served a very useful purpose in the food chain of the record industry. So I got to understand that. And I'm looking at all these hits that became B-side hits, like I Will Survive. These radio DJs started discovering these hits out of nowhere. And as I did the research back on this, songs like Unchained Melody, which by the Righteous Brothers became a huge hit, not once, but twice. It came out when the movie Ghost came out again. The A side was a song called Hung on You. And it was just amazing to me that radio DJs were flipping these hidden gems over because they would listen to these things in queue off air and say, hey, that's a pretty good song. In the case of the Righteous Brothers, radio DJs back in 1965, because Hung on You was supposed to be the follow-up to You've Lost That Love and Feeling. Phil Spector was the record producer at the time, and he actually put really bad songs on the B-side because he didn't want radio DJs to even focus on them at all. So he actually put these songs he thought were going to tank on the B-side. Well, Les Baxter had a hit with Unchained Melody, a number one hit back in 1955. So when that appeared on the B-side, radio DJs were listening to it in queue saying, wow, listen to these vocals by Bobby Hatfield. These are great. They would flip it over, play for their audience. And back then, viral back then was radio DJs had the ability to make a song a hit, kind of like things that go viral today on the internet. Radio DJs had that power. So when they started playing this B-side, Unchained Melody, and hearing these vocals from Bobby Hatfield, the song, you know, shot straight up the charts. And this happened time and time again. And as I did the research, hundreds of times, these B-side songs were becoming hits because radio DJs were giving them a second chance. And what I gathered from that and was able to, you know, extract from that is that we all have B-sides in our lives and in our business. Like I said in the last segment, we spend years of our lives being who we are. We have the skills. We have the talent. We just got to dig deep, take them out, polish them up, flip them over, and reintroduce them into the world.
You know, that's an interesting – well, number one, I love the concept. I wrote a book called Second Chances. And the concept that who we may present – as our, I'm going to call it our A self, that's okay. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But deep within, as you said, is the truth of who we are. And sometimes it's a matter of flipping it over and just listening to the beauty of that. Right. I'm fascinated. I have to tell you about two things. Number one, I'm fascinated by the Unchained Melody story.
Yeah.
Love the song. Oh my gosh. Just like, and the funny part it is, is you said, okay, well, here was the A side. You've lost that loving feeling. And then this other one was supposed to be the follow-up hit, and it's like, well, the two you remember are You've Lost That Loving Feeling and Unchained Melody. That's the rest of them, it's gone.
Right. That's right. That's right. Think of it this way, too. The Rock Around the Clock, the song that quintessentially started the rock and roll revolution, right? Bill Haley and the Comets, 1955, stayed on the charts for 8 weeks and literally launched rock and roll. That song was a B-side.
Really?
The A-side. Yeah, the A-side was a song called 13 Women and Only One Man in Town, and it went nowhere, but there was a movie called Blackboard Jungle, and Rock Around the Clock appeared in the credits of Blackboard Jungle, and it just caught on with the kids, and next thing you know, it launches rock and roll. But you got songs like Tequila and La Bamba and Maggie May. All these songs were B-sides, never meant to be hits, but you got to remember, this is only one person's opinion. One guy sitting in an executive chair at some record label saying, no, that's not a hit. And here's the thing from a songwriter standpoint. You've probably written a few songs if you were a singer in a band. Here's the thing from a songwriter standpoint. We put the same amount of time and effort into writing a song, into rehearsing a song, into letting the bandmates work on their parts, to go into the recording studio and put all that time and energy to record the tracks. All the same effort went into the B-sides as the A-sides. No less effort went into the B-side. However, when it got up to the executive level, they said, no, that's a filler. And I can only picture musicians and artists and songwriters sitting back going, well, thanks a lot. We poured our hearts into that, only for one person to say it's not good enough.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was probably about a year and a half ago, I guess, in Vegas and saw Rod Stewart.
Yeah.
First time I'd seen him live. And one of the business associates had gone out, and he thought, well, this is going to be blasé. Well, it was a great show.
Right, right.
I mean, just a great show. I'm sitting there thinking, man, Rod Stewart is, you know, he got a little age on me, and it was still rocking. But he told the story about Maggie May and the fact that they didn't want it. I mean, you know, no, this is no good. And he's like, no, we're going to put this on there.
Right.
You know, I want this. And, you know, to me, that was probably the song that really in the 70s that came out of his that said, yeah, I'm going to listen to this guy because it was so cool and had such wonderful instrumentation. Oh. I mean, you couldn't get much better.
The mandolin. I mean, who could get the mandolin in Maggie May? But see, back in the day, a song like Maggie May would never stand a chance of becoming a hit record because it was more than 5 minutes long. Right. Radio back in the 70s were not playing 5 minute song, cuts and this sort of thing. So the A side, for those who are watching this and just learning of it, was Reason to Believe. Reason to Believe did okay. I think it may have cracked the top 20, maybe the top 10. But Maggie May DJ started flipping it over, and it launched, and it that B-side became number one simultaneously in the UK and in the United States at the same time, and is now listed in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as one of the top 500 songs that changed the course of rock and roll.
That's amazing. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. My guest is Larry Williams. He is a radio broadcaster, journalist, and business expert. He has written a really cool book, Develop Your B-Sides. And when we get back from the break, we're going to talk more about that and his meeting with Dick Clark, which I think is awesome. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a minute. We're back with my guest, Larry Williams, who is a radio broadcaster, business expert, journalist, and the author of Develop Your B-Side. And, you know, okay, look, we could talk all day long about music. And the funny part is you'll talk about a song, Larry, and I'm starting to hear it, you know, and you said the mandolin and I'm sitting there and I just want to hear it and sing it and play it. It's like, oh my gosh, the music just is so pervasive. But there is a segment of this that goes beyond the stories of the song to something that is more significant for us in Develop Your B-Side. And I really would like for you to get into that for us a little bit.
Sure, I'd love to, Chuck. It comes to me as a personal improvement mechanism I used for years back in the 90s and through the 2000s. I would just B-side everything in my life. I didn't tell anybody about this. I mean, people would come up to me and they say, what project are you working on now? What are you doing? I said, oh, I'm B-siding something. I would just use it and they said, what's that? I said, oh, it's just radio jargon. I used to B-side things. I used to find things that I could pour myself into and really develop and work on and take to the next level and reintroduce. And this was a personal improvement mechanism for me. Nobody else. I didn't share a concept or an idea with anybody. I just did this for 20 years. And it wasn't until recently I started talking about it. So this is like I think of B-sides that I'm introducing it and writing a book on it and such as kind of like an undiscovered hidden gem. Like I feel like Indiana Jones had just discovered the temple of something, you know. It's, I never used to talk about it. I just used to use it for myself. Back in 91, this is really kind of strange. Back in 1991, I was on the air. It was the morning hours, probably around 10 o'clock or so in the morning. And I see a thing come over the wire that I have to, besides playing music and having fun on the morning show and joking around, I have to read some serious news stories occasionally for the upcoming newscast at noon.
Sure.
So this story was coming over the wire, and it was a local story just 3 miles from the radio station about a young girl, 11-year-old girl, who just got kidnapped while walking to the school bus stop. So I had to read this copy on the air, dry read, mind you. And for those who don't know about radio, dry read is when you don't have a chance to rehearse it and read it, during a break.
Right.
So I had to just shoved in front of me. I'm reading this dry read about a young girl, 11 years old, just got kidnapped while walking to the school bus stop. Her father witnessed the abduction but could not get a license plate number. And they were looking for a gray two-tone four-door sedan. And if they'd seen this vehicle, to call the South Lake Tahoe Police Department. So I had to read this. And then we went to break. And I'm just sitting there thinking, my gosh, how does this happen? I couldn't wrap my mind around it. And it was really disturbing to me. And we followed the story, throughout the course of the day. And of course, I got home, watched the news, it was on every news channel. This story would be ongoing, and the search effort and the community response. And there was pink ribbons all around the city. Her face was in the storefront of every single store around the area. Days would turn into weeks would turn into months, and they still couldn't find this missing girl. And I just couldn't wrap my mind around my community, my town, and here's a little girl that gets thrown in the back of a car and drives off. We never see this girl again. It was really sad. 6 months go by, and it's November. First snowfall up at Lake Tahoe. Again, I was an avid skier. Remember, I wanted to pull records for the DJs to go skiing or earn some extra ski money. So I'm up on a chairlift, and I got this melody going through my head with the words, "Soon the tears of joy will rain and we'll fulfill our dreams." And I knew what was happening. It was that uncontrollable urge to want to write a song. And it was, I was thinking of this little girl, and it's like, no, I'm not going to write. I don't do that no more. I'm a radio DJ. I play other people's songs. I don't write songs anymore. So I put it off, and I just started jotting down the words, here and there as I got home. And a few days went by, and next thing you know, I got a verse and I got a chorus. I'm thinking, all right, I need to probably write this song. By now, it's the first week of December. So I sit down with my acoustic guitar, which is the only piece of musical equipment I had left because I left it all in Southern California when I moved to Tahoe. And so I got my acoustic guitar out and I started, you know, strumming it, singing like Bob Dylan, and coming up with the whole melody line and everything for this song. So I created a song. It's mid-December and I'm thinking of this family that's going to spend their first Christmas without their daughter. And I'm all, what am I going to do? It's like, well, I guess I should present it to the family. So I contacted the mother of this missing girl and I said, listen, I wrote a song for your daughter and I'd like to present it to you. I went up to Tahoe and I went to a coffee shop, gave her a little cassette tape of me singing like Bob Dylan, which she listened to later, gave her a lyric sheet so she'd have something to look at. And of course she cheered up and was very thankful and grateful. The holidays came and went. I went back to doing radio and everything else. And I realized I could do more. I could B-side. That's what B-siding is, just doing more. I thought I could do more with this. I wrote the song. I got that out of my system. You know, the little voice in the back of my head was saying, don't do it. And I went ahead and did it. I thought I could do more. I contacted a recording studio in Reno, got them to donate recording time, found a band, a top 40 band locally, who would be the musicians on the record. I called up the mom and said, listen, we're going to go in the recording studio and record this. Would you like to come in and say a few words, like a poem to your daughter in the bridge of the song? She said, I'd love to. So we went in there, spent a whole day, a big recording session doing this one song. It came out beautifully. In fact, so good. We decided on the spot, let's do a press conference tomorrow. And we did. We did a press conference. All the news media came out. Next thing you know, the media was red hot once again. Because remember, during the holidays, they don't give you a lot of media on a six-month-old kidnapping case. So what it did is the song helped reinvigorate the search effort. It helped bring a community together, help the family heal. We sold cassette tapes and it made a lot of money to buy more posters and flyers and things to help the search effort. So I really felt good about what I did, all because I B-sided something. Now,
that's a fascinating story. That is fascinating.
It gets better. The reason I came out with this book now, and the reason I even talk about B-sides 20 years after discovering it or stumbling upon it, is I finally realized, Chuck, the power of what this B-side stuff is all about. August 26, 2009, I get a phone call from the mother of that missing child, who I haven't talked to in like 15 years. And she said, Larry, they found her. She's alive.
No.
Yeah. And obviously there's a lot of tears. It's very emotional for me. That girl was J.C. Dugard. The girl I wrote that song for was J.C. Dugard. And many people in your audience might remember her. She spent 18 years in captivity and was found in the backyard of a home in Antioch, California. She bore two children with her kidnapper, and her story now is the most celebrated abduction recovery in modern American history. And at the heart of it was my little soundtrack, my little song, which I don't take credit for the song Finding the Girl. It did nothing of the sort. But if it did nothing else, then keep hope alive in the heart of that mom, which is why she was calling me to thank me for writing a song that helped keep hope alive, then I did something great. You know, I did something that I feel so great about. And I think that's what all of our B-sides are. We can't let that one little record executive say it's a filler, it's not good enough to be a hit. We've got talents, we've got skills. All these things are lying down deep that we just have to polish off and believe in and reintroduce them to the world. And it might help one person. And that's the best thing of all. It helps one person. It's all worth it.
You know, I have to say this, Larry. Number one, that is an incredible story. That is an incredible story.
Thank you.
But I also have to say to you, I never connected the dots or put it into this perspective. But if you think about it, when we started the show, you know, I said, oh my goodness, I was a music major in college and so forth, and it didn't work, and I became an accountant, and then I became a speaker later. Well, you know, the speaker part is really resurrecting that B-side. My A-side was I was going to be the guy that goes out and performs music and has a great time and touches people and so forth, and it didn't work.
Right.
The B-side is saying, but I have something to say. And maybe I didn't say it back in the late 70s and early 80s, and maybe I wasn't quite ready, or maybe I wasn't quite clear enough. But the B-side allows that to take place today. And I think what you've talked about is really quite profound, because so many people get so caught up in, well, I'm not enough or whatever, and they never really think about, you know, just follow the little voice within and do the thing that you're led to do. That's and it. Don't worry about what the outcome is. Just do it. Right. Because it will make a difference.
Right. And like I said, I made the difference in the life of one person. And yeah, the community back in 91, 92, they enjoyed it and this sort of thing. But if I did nothing else but to make that mom happy, to keep hope alive in her heart, and she never gave up hope, it's like, wow, that's the power. I did that. And I'm thrilled about it. And I think of songwriters today and the music that we hear today, all of us and our spouses, we all have songs, songs that touch our heart in one way or another. I want your audience to think for a moment of one song that touches your heart. Think about this. That songwriter has no clue.
Right.
That songwriter has no clue that they are impacting you the way they are. So think of all those songs, and I like to think of what everything we do is part of our musical catalog. We have to keep coming up with new music. We have to keep coming up with new ideas, new fresh ideas, just like an artist would. And we're going to go out there and do things. In the back of our mind, we don't want to defeat ourselves and say, let's not produce that. Let's not, exhibit that or show that off to the world. We need to, because it could help one person, and you may not even know it. You may not know it for 18 years, that you're helping out some person, in a great way by the one contribution that you're putting forth.
This is Chuck Gallagher with my guest, Larry Williams. And Larry, this has been such a wonderful interview. We're going to join back again after our break. You can hear us on Transformation Talk Radio. And because, Larry, what you do is transformative, we are deeply appreciative. We're going to talk a little bit more about developing your B-sides and your meeting with Dick Clark. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a minute. And we're back with our last segment. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio and my guest, Larry Williams, who is a veteran broadcaster who's got an amazing story. And Larry, you know more about music than I probably ever dreamed of wanting to know. Let me say this to the folks that are listening. If you want to know more about what Larry does, the seminars that he has to offer, the books that are available for sale, go to LarryPresents.com, LarryPresents.com. LarryPresents.com. It is a great website. I particularly like the B-side movement that you have reflected there. And, Larry, for those people that are a bit younger who might be listening to the show, they're not going to remember cassette tapes, rewinding the tapes, or what a 45 is.
That's true. That's true. I usually, in my seminars, I'll hold up a 45 RPM record. I say, we used to play music on these things years ago because it is really kind of, they don't relate to it. But I tell you, the whole B-side thing is not just a concept based on old technology. B-sides are still used today. I know you and I were talking a little bit about rappers and this sort of thing. Rap music was kind of on the skids about 10 years or so ago, and it got revived because of collaborations. Rap artists joining with pop artists, cross-labeling, if you will, and they didn't do that in the old days. If you're on one label, you can't sing with somebody else on a different label. But the whole idea of cross-pollinating artists is something that revived rap music, made it more mainstream and pop. That's a B-side. That's taking something else and using it as a lure. We have, you remember compact discs when they came out? It wasn't by accident. They called it a single, a CD single. That was because they wanted to build upon what the single 45 was doing for the LPs. And we see it in music videos with product placement. Now they act in music videos. That sort of thing, again, is another lure. It's something to bring in. Remix versions. Britney Spears comes out with a song. Now there's 12 different versions. There's an indie remix. There's a hip-hop remix. There's a techno remix. All to draw in that audience and introduce them to Britney Spears. So remixes. I love the one that a lot of people can relate to. If you love Bruno Mars or Journey or any rock groups, you like going to concerts. Now artists have found a way to B-side and make money for themselves and to lure people in. Now you can get the VIP package. You can sit in the first 10 rows. You play a little premium. You'll sit in the first 10 rows and you might get a program. You sit in the first 5 rows, you might be able to go backstage and you get a signed program or get a photograph. If you go to a KISS concert now, you can spend $5,000 and get the guitar that Paul Stanley smashes on stage, and he'll even sign it for you. These are all B-side lures that are still used. It's still very popular. They just don't call it B-sides.
Right. It is fascinating. The concept may exist. The terminology is going to change.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit. I have to pick your brain a little bit about music, and I know we don't have quite as long in this segment, but you met entertainment legend Dick Clark. Now, honestly, Larry, I don't know anyone who's met Dick Clark, so either I've got a really small sphere of friends and need to broaden that a little bit, but tell me about that, because that had to be incredible.
It was. He was my mentor, and oh my gosh, where do I start? I was at the radio station one day, and a guy walks in, and he wanted to know if we're hiring DJs, right, radio broadcasters. And I said, not at this time. So I held on to his card, and I'm trying to make this quick. About a year later, now I have an entertainment company, a DJ company that works for the casinos and works for corporates and does weddings and all kinds of stuff like that. I've had that for 20 some years. But back in the early stages, back in 1995, I said, hey, I called this guy up because I kept his card. I said, listen, you want to come work for me? And he said, sure. So I put him to work doing school dances and casino barking and emceeing at casinos and stuff. And the next thing you know, I've taken some equipment to him at his house for an elementary school dance. Okay. Now, I had met Dick Clark a year earlier at a meet and greet up at Lake Tahoe, and I was thrilled. I had a picture of my office. I was just so enamored because he was a legend. I just so admired him. Anyways, I'm taking this equipment to my friend. We're putting it in his garage because the next day he's doing an elementary school dance. He said, Larry, come on over here. I want to show you something, since I know you're a fan. And I'm walking through his kitchen into his living room. I'm thinking, fan of what? Well, he walks over to the bookcase. He takes a picture off the bookcase. He hands it to me. It's a picture of him and his wife with Dick and Carrie Clark. I'm all, oh, you've met Dick too. He goes, well, I'm just a little closer than that. I'm all, what do you mean closer? He goes, well, Carrie's my sister and Dick's my brother-in-law.
No way.
I'm all, what? I've got Dick Clark's brother-in-law on my payroll for like a year and a half. I didn't even know it. and he's showing me pictures with his kids and stuff and Dick and everybody. And I'm thinking, Uncle Dick? He's all, yeah, Uncle Dick. I go, wow, you're related to rock and roll royalty. He goes, he's just my brother-in-law.
So through
that, just started an incredible friendship that lasted, gosh, almost 20 years till his death in 2012. I'm still very close with the family, but I had the very great honor of being his personal DJ and master of ceremonies for all of his family events. So I would go down to his estate in Malibu and be there with the family and just not be a hired gun, just be a friend and someone that gives back to his family. And obviously he helped me with a few things. He wrote the foreword to my book, Customer Service A to Z. And it just was just a wonderful friendship, just the greatest family you could possibly imagine. These people are so down to earth. People ask me all the time, what was Dick Clark like? I said, exactly what you saw on TV. So down to earth, so natural, so authentic, integrity, you know, just as much as can be, just a warm, warm person that was just a sweet, sweet man.
That's that's fascinating. Okay, I've got to say, it's odd to hear, okay, wait a minute, you employed someone connected with Dick Clark. Dick could have employed him, but...
Two of them, actually, because that son of Rob was his name. His son, about 8 years later, was 16, 17. I started to employ him. So I actually had Dick's brother-in-law on the payroll. And about 10 years later, I had his nephew on the payroll.
Oh, that is too funny.
And they worked for me. But like I said, it was so nice just to be so connected to the family. The family. Hey, again, I think that's what Dick was all about. He's all about family, personal connections. And I talk about this in my seminars and stuff, being authentic and making that personal connection one-on-one. And that's what he was all about. It was just, you know, the family is just tremendous. And they, to this day, they're still like the greatest people in the world. We're so very close.
So my guest is Larry Williams. You can go to LarryPresents.com and find out information about what Larry is up to today and the seminars that he has to offer. Larry, we've got, I don't know, probably 2 minutes left. I know that you've been the author of 3 books, Mind Your Own Business, Customer Service A to Z, where the foreword was written by Dick Clark, and your new book, Develop Your B-Sides. With a little bit of time we've got left, what are 2 things that you would want this audience to remember from this interview?
You know, think of your favorite music. Think of your favorite music and how you can maybe apply the lessons of music to dig down deep to develop skills and talent. Now, by that, I mean we use music as a mechanism. We use it as a mechanism to empower us to do things. I mean, it makes us feel happy. It makes us feel sad. Yeah, it could lift us up when we're down. Music is a universal language. And if we could tap into the power of that to develop something, you know, that would be something great for us. So think of everything you do as a hit record. And if you're going to be working on a different project here, or you want to try a different job interview, think of everything you're doing as a song. You know, find a way to tap into the idea that you've got to keep coming up with new and different ideas to, you know, hopefully find the next big hit in your catalog known as life. Second thing I would say is be authentic and personable as you possibly can. One thing I learned from my mentor, Dick Clark, is he would speak to you through the TV and you would feel as though he's talking directly to you. That's because he wasn't an announcer. He wasn't a master of ceremonies just talking to a whole group of people. He was authentic. He would literally pick out people in the audience and talk directly to them. So in everything you do, whether it's a job interview, whether it's talking to your kids or your wife, just be in the moment. Be in the moment, be authentic, one-on-one, personal, be a conversationalist. And that's my two takeaways.
You know, Larry, I have to thank you because this has been very authentic. It has been absolutely one of the most pleasurable interviews that I have had. It's great to talk about music, especially with someone with your background. But most importantly, your authenticity has helped us realize that not only is it what we present, but the other parts of our life that we can continue to develop. And maybe those B-sides become the Unchained Melody that transformed the movie Ghost into a memorable experience that most of us who have seen it will never forget. My guest again is Larry Williams, veteran broadcaster, business expert. You can find Larry at LarryPresents.com. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. Thanks for sticking with us, and we look forward to visiting with you next week. And as I end every show, remember, every choice we have in life has a consequence. Make those choices wisely. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Tune in each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com each Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher.